Welcome to episode 24 of Crossroads of Destiny and Avatar, the Last Airbender Universe podcast. Right now, we're talking about every episode of Nickelodeon's Avatar, the Last Airbender, Netflix edition, season one, one at a time. I am Chelsea Hopkins, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Andrew and Melanie Grant. How are you two doing?
Pretty good.
We're hanging in there.
We're here.
Yeah, full disclosure, it is nearly 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. We're tired. It's a Sunday night. We got things going on this week, but that's okay. And that said, we are just going to dive right in because you have now heard at this point our preview lead-in episode into mm-hmm. what we're talking about today. So we are talking about the new adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender that just came to Netflix. This episode, we are talking about episode one, which is simply titled Aang. It was directed by Michael Goy, who also did the cinematography. The teleplay is by Albert Kim, who is the showrunner for this adaptation, as well as crediting the original animated showrunners and the guys who wrote the original script, The Boy and the Iceberg, Avatar Returns, Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Knitzko. And this aired, released on February 22nd with the rest of the season. So even though Netflix did not do week by week, we did, or we are. So I borrowed this synopsis from Wikipedia, so it was not written by me, but that's okay. The series is set in a war-torn world inspired by various Asian and indigenous cultures where certain people can, quote, bend one of the four classical elements, water, earth, fire, or air. Aang, the Avatar and the last living airbender, is the bridge between the mortal and spirit worlds and the only one capable of bending all four of the elements instead of just one. The Avatar maintains the balance of the world and nature to bring peace, and Aang is now faced with the responsibility of ending the ambitions of the militaristic Fire Nation to conquer the world. With his new companions Katara and Sokka, Aang sets out to master the four elements while pursued by Zuko, the exiled crown prince of the Fire Nation, who seeks to regain his honor by capturing him. And the one thing I want to say before I ask you guys your initial thoughts is in our preview lead-in episode, I expressed, hey, I think at least the one consistent thing we have going from the animated series is that the composer returned. And though from early on, it sounds like it could have been Jeremy Zuckerman, it's not. It is not. They use the music from the series, but the composer for this, from the animated series, but the composer for this adaptation is Takeshi Furukawa. And he does pretty heavily borrow from the animated series. So I wonder if that'll continue or if it was just a first episode kind of thing. But I just wanted to say that since I did mention the composer in our lead-in episode. So I want to start you guys off. How about Andrew, start us? Can you give us a brief, because we will dive in, a brief just like first reaction? What are your thoughts so far based on just the first episode?
It's definitely aimed at an older audience. It's a bit more graphic.
Yeah, and like the first 2 minutes, we get an earthbender burnt to a crisp.
Right.
Super intense.
I will say that it was interesting how it started. Like, it just knowing parts of the story, like, we don't see a lot of that happen, if at all, until much later in the series. So they're definitely, like, putting things together chronologically. And it's less of the gaps that we saw in the original animated, but overall I thought it was pretty good. I did enjoy it.
Okay, Melanie, your initial thoughts? What are you thinking?
I liked it a lot. I won't say that I liked it better than the original one, because I feel like that would not be received very well by
I would assume you don't think that either, do you? I mean,
no, I don't.
And if you did, you could say
I did enjoy it a lot more than I thought I was going to, mainly because I have never really liked animated TV shows, like ever, even as like a little kid. I watch them and I enjoy them, but I found the live action opener to be a little bit more interesting than the TV show. But also going to Drew's point is that it was more geared to a younger audience for obvious reasons with the animated series, and this one definitely wouldn't be, right? And I found the moves with the martial arts and the bending itself to be really cool. I like that a lot.
I share some of your initial reactions. I think my overall net reaction so far is positive. I do like more than I dislike. That saying, I did take two pages of notes. And I mean, I don't want this entire episode to be comparison to the animated show, although inevitably that will be a lot of what we talk about just right. because that's our history. I liked it. Again, I like the consistency in the music, even if it isn't the same composer. Mm-hmm. I like that characters look like themselves and largely have the same personalities. Like Sokka has a couple of lines that reveals that he's a bit of a cut up and he has that sense of humor.
Yeah.
You get some emotional, inspirational speech from Katara. You get some angst from Zuko. Like you get the things from the characters that you're expecting to varying degrees of success, I would say. Like
correct.
I will say one complaint that I have just regarding characters is Iroh looks great. I don't feel cartoon Iroh warmth.
No.
Granted, Mako, who is the voice actor for Iroh in the original series, or at least in the first couple of seasons, has that kind of warm grandpa voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Seon Lee, I'm not entirely sure if I'm pronouncing that 100% correctly, but he looks the part. He looks great as Iroh. Mm-hmm. And again, this is episode one. We've had very limited interactions with him. But so far, I'm just not getting that warm hug, happy-go-lucky, slightly bumbling Uncle Iroh that we get in the right. TV show.
Right. I had a feeling I knew Iroh was going to be a problem, even though he looks great.
Mm-hmm.
I had a feeling Iroh was going to be a problem because of how emotionally charged his entire character is in the animated series.
Yeah.
So we've already fallen in love with his voice. We have already know what it's, you know, supposed to feel like. We know the importance of why it's supposed to feel that way, why it does need to be emotionally charged, and he does need to be softer than Zuko around him.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to kind of match energy with Zuko a little bit,
yeah,
it was weird,
is not the Iroh that we're supposed to have.
Yeah. But then so I think the difficult line that they are towing is that this isn't a cartoon, and right. it risks becoming
campy.
That's yeah. exactly the word I was looking for, thank you. It risks becoming campy if they try and lean too much into the Iroh that we know already.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see how they toe that line, to see if Iroh becomes a little bit more of the warm grandpa person that we're so in love with in the show. And I think some of that will come with the emotional scenes that we know are yet to come. Mm-hmm. The advice, the talking Zuko off the ledge, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's yet to come. I love the way... I love the bending so far. I do.
Yeah.
I think I still need to see a lot more of it. But what we've gotten so far, I do really enjoy, especially what we've seen of the fire bending. Although there was a brief moment where I had a panic attack thinking that they were using source fire like in the Shyamalan movie. But I largely liked the fire bending, especially because that's what we mostly saw in this episode.
Right, right.
Katara's not doing enough water bending yet for us to really say we've seen water bending. Although mm-hmm. I do think that it looks, even in its limited capacity so far, better than the live action movie.
Low bar, but yes.
Yes. Earth bending. I'm looking forward to seeing some like serious earthbenders, because so far all we've really seen, there was one scene where he was like, the earthbender we saw at the beginning was jutting rock up from the ground and it knocking people out, and he like jumped across it, and it that looks cool.
Yeah.
But then everything else was like, I'm going to dig my hand into the ground and twist my knuckle, and then earthbending is going to happen. So I'm looking forward to seeing if hopefully they utilize some of the different martial arts styles for the different bending that we get in the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I will say they did earthbending already 1,000% better than Shyamalan.
Again, the like eight people
that bend
moving
like three
in
rocks,
step, and then the one rock floating across the screen.
Absolutely garbage. So
garbage.
So the fact that like it blended in with the scene, and that it seemed, you know, like it was dusty and it was dirty and it was, you know, hard. Like it was there was still some martial arts involved.
Mm-hmm.
There was still a very different fighting style from the firebenders that were attacking him. And we see that a lot, like the jutting stones and everything like that. Mm-hmm. That was a very common thing that we saw from earthbenders. So like to already incorporate that much I think is awesome.
Yes, I'm looking forward especially to like the next big thing, if we follow the chronology of the animated series, is right. We're going to see Boomy, right? Like right. Assuming they stick to the same like sequence of events, Boomy should be maybe even in the next episode. I don't know. The way right. they're combining these first few episodes right. at a time. Because, I mean, they've got to. There are 8 episodes in Plowing season through. 1
yeah.
versus the 22, mm-hmm. 20 that are in the animated season 1. So that's that. Mm-hmm. I want to say one more. I did say I love the bending so far, but I do have a complaint regarding airbending specifically. Mm. Because while I think they did a good job for what they can do, airbending loses some of its magic outside of a cartoon. It doesn't work as well for me. I'm thinking about like in the end of the Avatar Returns animated, as Aang is escaping the Fire Nation's ship, he's like running in spirals around the hallway. Mm. And there's a lot more like, there's a goofiness to airbending
yeah.
to a certain extent. We didn't see any air scooter. That doesn't mean we won't see it at some point later. But there's something about cartoon physics that lets airbending be a lot cooler than what we get in the live action. And here it sometimes came across as a little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
Now, again, better than Shyamalan's film, but I don't think we need to keep driving that point home. I think right. that's a given for any aspect of the show.
Right.
Though we talked about the music for that movie and it's really good. So let's talk kind of like sequence of events. We start this episode with something new.
Yeah.
In how it's told, at least. The information isn't necessarily new. We open with a flashback. We open with Sozin,
mm-hmm.
the firebender who started the war.
Yep.
And we are getting the background of the war before we ever meet Aang.
Right.
Before we meet Katara and Sokka, for sure. What did you guys think of it opening with a flashback?
It threw me off.
Uh-huh.
Threw me off quite a bit.
I was it was just fun like, watching y'all's faces.
This isn't... Wait, what's happening? So, right. like, after piecing it everything together, what I was seeing, I did think it was pretty cool. I always had an idea of how Gatso goes down.
Mm-hmm.
We never really know, right?
Right.
Like, we don't see that fight.
Yeah, in the animated episode, we just see, like, his body surrounded by Fire Nation bodies.
Right. So we knew that he was... So that I guess that's what I would have liked to see is, like, one, we see Gyatso and we're... This is our opportunity to, like, get attached to him, and we don't. We don't. It's, like, kind of weird speeches and things like that. Yes, I believe in you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Love it. But at the same time, he's also supposed to be like, yeah, this is pretty heavy, but you're also 12. So let's, you know, like little cake scenes and things like that of like
right.
pranking the other masters of airbending. That's very important to Gatso's story because it's very important to Aang. And I feel like they've already taken that out. They've already taken the playfulness out that's important to Aang. And so now we don't have that connection to Gatso. And so when he dies, it's, well, we all know what's happening. We all know what's coming. But we also don't really feel that connection.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been talked about. There's a bit of a buildup. That's why, like, in the animated series, we, like, get these flashbacks. We get these bits and pieces of why this connection is important. And then we see the devastation of... The fact that he left, like, Aang left this guy 12 minutes ago in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back, and not only is he dead, he's dead. Everyone's dead.
Right.
And that wasn't quite the reveal that I would have liked it to be either.
That's a point I want to linger on some more in a minute. Okay. Melanie, you were making a face as Andrew was just talking, and so I want to hear some of your thoughts.
I did feel the connection to Gyatso. I felt really sad that he was gone.
See, I will say that I really liked the Aang and Gyatso interactions.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I liked their buddy-buddiness.
And it's not to say that we won't get those memories later either. So there, I mean, it is just the first episode squished, all three of those first episodes squished into one. So it's not to say that we won't see all of those little playful memories that you're describing at a later time.
No, I know. And I'm just... The bigger point, I did get a little sidetracked there. The bigger point was, like, in that fight scene, since that's what we were doing, and we've already seen that this is supposed to be, like, 12 times more hardcore than the animated series, with Sozin literally just lighting dudes up like nothing. We see Gyatso get pinned down, and I would have liked to like have that drawn out a little bit more within just the one, like the one fight with Sozin.
Yeah. So you're getting a little bit to what my complaint. So we talked in our lead up episode about how we're not precious about things being exactly right to the series. Like, I'm okay with changes as long as they make sense, as long as they make improvements or fit the medium of it being live action versus animated. Like, I get it. I'm okay with that. And so at first I was like, okay, we're starting with the flashback. That's interesting. That's new. That's different. But as they started bringing things into the flashback at the beginning and giving us that history that we get in the show later that we have built up to, I realized the reason they did it that way in the animated series, the reason they did it was to build things up or to show us things one way only to show us how it could be a different way. For example, we're only in season two of our animated series rewatch and talk through. There is a moment later in like season three where we get something awesome in regard to a firebending power.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, we get it in like the first 8 minutes where they show up at the airbending temple and the firebenders like launch fire from their fist and like fly like they're in a jetpack.
Mm-hmm.
That is a cool thing. It's also a terrifying thing because when we see it in the animated show, we've never seen that versus against like all the firebending that we've seen so far across 2.5 seasons of the show. And so when they show it to us, it's like, oh, this is on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have that history build up in the live action show so far. It's like, oh, that's just what firebending is.
Yeah.
Or to somebody who is not as versed in the animated series, they just think that's what firebending is.
This is commonplace.
And they reference the comet. This. And again, the comet in the show, I hate this, all this comparison, but I mean, it is what it is. That's like, it's kind of what we're doing. It's episode one. That's how we're setting this up. We get that in Winter Solstice, the reveal of the Sozin's comet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to be like an oh snap moment for Aang. I didn't know about this previously. I thought I had more time. No, I've got a limited amount of time before they could do this again.
Yeah.
Before they could end the war. And so I'm not opposed to flashbacks, but I almost feel like they slipped too much in that they could have revealed later to make it more powerful.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
That said, what we saw, I liked. There's good stuff going on. I think it's cool to start with Sozin versus starting with like Ozai, for example. We still haven't seen Ozai.
Right.
Who we know is like the actual big bad of the series, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So starting with Sozin is cool. I at first thought we see the Earthbender giving the message to the other person on the horse to it's like the Fire Nation's plans. And at first I thought it might have been Zhang Zhang, but then when they revealed that it was Sozin who was doing this.
Right.
I was like, yeah, the time doesn't work out. It's not Zhang Zhang. But I wish that they saved some things for later. I'm not opposed to the flashback, but it just wasn't as powerful as it could have been. And Gyatso, that scene, my issue with the Gyatso scene was the way it seemed set up in the animated show was that he took out like half the army by himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was not the case. Mm-hmm. And in one sense, I can see, okay, that shows how scary Sozin is, sure. But again, Sozin's not the big bad of the series. I don't need to know necessarily how scary he is.
Right.
I would rather see the lengths to which Gyatso fights to protect the children.
Exactly.
Because that was really heavy, the fact that he was protecting children there. And we all three looked at each other and talked about, like, execute Order 66, kill the younglings vibes.
Yeah. The younglings.
Because that's what it was. And I wrote down in my notes, like, that's powerful when you realize that Sozin knows that the airbender is a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's there to kill everybody, but he's especially there to kill the kids.
Right.
And so that could have been a more powerful opportunity for them to make Gyatso a more tragic death.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted them to draw it out a little bit more. Yeah. I wanted him to be a little more juiced up. Like,
yeah, like give Sozin a reason to go after Gyatso.
Right.
Gyatso's taken out half the firebender army that showed up. And then Sozin can show up and take him out. Like, that's what I wanted a little bit more of.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how about we start focusing on like a character by character basis? We talked a little bit about Iroh already. Aang. First thoughts, impressions of Aang, Melanie?
He seems like a good little actor. He showed a lot of emotions, like straight out the gate when he was talking about having to take the responsibility of being the Avatar and saying he didn't want to do it. Like, he had tears just like in his eyes already about it. So, but there are some moments where I feel like, oh, it's a child actor. Feels a little cheesy.
I feel that, yeah, a little bit.
It was a little muted. I wanted him to be a little bit more over the top. And I get that we're approaching that same, like...
the issue we talked about with Iroh.
Right. Like, we don't want it to don't want it to be a mimic, but I do want to know that he's a 12-year-old. Yeah. You know, he is a kid, and mm-hmm. he needs to be doing kid things. And I just didn't really get that. Because, as reported, it does seem a lot more of a serious Aang. And I don't know if I love it yet.
That is exactly what I was about to bring up, because we talked a little bit ahead of time just between us about things that were kind of leaking out about reactions from like press or from interviews hyping up the show, quote unquote, hyping up the show. And one of the things was they make Aang grow up really fast. And I mean, that is a process in the animated show. I mean, we have whole episodes where like the Warriors of Kyoshi happens because he wants to go ride the elephant koi.
Yeah.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, specifically, we're not going to have him ride the elephant koi because he's not going to send them on like a wonky fun adventure. Like, Aang is like, we need to get down to business right away. And I mean, at the end of this episode, we are there. Mm-hmm. Aang is there. He's like, it is time to master the elements and it is time to do my job as the Avatar. He's like reached acceptance mode.
Which really we don't get for a while.
Yeah, we almost don't get that until the storm, which is like more than halfway through season one.
Yeah.
Constraints of a live action show, constraints of an 8-episode season.
Yeah. I mean,
but that's something they did to themselves, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. You could have drawn this out.
Yeah.
You chose this.
Nobody would have complained.
By the box. It was just like you were in control of that the entire time.
Yeah.
And I mean, I will say they're much longer episodes too. So, I mean,
this is more than an hour.
We're not.
Yep.
Yeah. We're not like, they really only should have cut out like 6 episodes in total length. Like, There's a lot of space for them to have done things.
So much room for activities.
Yes.
So much room.
And activities is exactly what I'm trying to get to, is the fact that he is all over the place. He is bouncing off the walls. He is a free spirit.
Yeah, there's no penguin sledding.
The embodiment of like wind. Like, he's everywhere.
Uh-huh.
He's young, he's vibrant, he's a kid. And for him to immediately be like, oh yeah, that kind of sucks. I need to learn all the elements. Let's go. And you're like, that's not how that works. But okay. Yeah. Like, you're right. You do need to go do that. But I don't know of any 12-year-old who's just going to be like, yeah, that sounds like something
sounds
I need
like
to
I'm
take
gonna
care
do
of.
That.
Right.
So, I mean, we did get like a little bit of reluctance, but at the same time, it wasn't he runs away, but there was a lot of him processing that and dealing with it. Not just the fact that he was the Avatar, but the fact that he ran away.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was gone for 100 years. Like, all of that hits at later points that he has to process very differently throughout the series. And a lot of him wanting to do all the other things is a distraction from the fact, is not just from the fact that he's the Avatar, it's a distraction from the fact that he's the only airbender left.
Mm-hmm.
That he doesn't know the world that he lives in anymore.
Right.
Because the world he left was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So he is not connected to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a distraction, as a processing mechanism for a 12-year-old, he's going to go do the fun things that he wants to do. He's going to go find a way to connect back to the one thing that he's been wanting to do or that he's heard about. Like, oh, this was a fun thing that we never got a chance to do. Now he doesn't have the people to go do that thing with.
Right. It makes you wonder how certain things in this series are going to happen. Like, if I ever looked at the next episode, it's called Warriors. Now, I don't know what takes place in that. It's called Warriors, though. So I'm thinking of Warriors that we have coming up. We have the Warriors of Kyoshi.
Yep.
We have Bumi.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. Maybe we get the Deserter pretty early on. Maybe we get Zhang Zhang in this episode, too.
Maybe.
But like,
are they even? Do they even include Jet in this series?
I do believe Jet shows up. So Jet might be one of the Warriors as well.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, like, the reason the Warriors of Kyoshi happens is because he goes to ride the elephant koi. The right. reason the King of Omashu happens, the reason they go to Omashu is because he wants to ride the slides, that it's the mail delivery system. And so you take out that element of fun, they're going to have to give a pretty convincing reason to take us to all these other places. Yeah. Because, I mean, the whole point is that Aang is delaying his training. If he wasn't doing that, then they would just fly to the Northern Water Tribe. Like, because that's the next step is finding a waterbender teacher. Yeah. So this is episode one. We have to keep reminding ourselves this is episode one. We got seven more.
Y'all are being way, way harsher than I thought.
Again, my reaction was positive. It's just there's things that have me concerned because of how I know the rest of the season is supposed to be structured, quote unquote, supposed to be structured. So they could win me over. I'm open to being won over.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Still hoping for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Regarding the performance of Aang, the very first thing I wrote down about Aang in my notes is that the actor, whose name is Gordon Cormier, he has the smile down. Like, right away, he has that bright, child, innocent smile of Aang. And I liked that. I saw those childlike moments of Aang peek through. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some wooden child acting, too. There was some, like, kind of flat speech giving, too.
Yeah.
But episode one, people. Episode one. Mm-hmm. So moving on, how about we talk about kind of Katara and Sokka in tandem? What did we think about? And I would say, like, well, just giving my initial thoughts, I would say they might be the character highlights of the episode. Aside from maybe Zuko, too. I kind of like Zuko. But Katara and Sokka, they stood out to me.
Yeah, I felt like they stayed true to the characters from the animated series. I felt like I think you had mentioned earlier already in the episode is that they found people that kind of emulated how their personalities were really, really well.
Yeah, like the actor playing Sokka, his name is Ian Owsley. He kind of sounds like Jack DeSena.
He does.
He sounds like Sokka from the show, which is fine. I mean, I wasn't looking for a sound alike, but the fact that he is doesn't upset me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the sarcasm and the short fuse that he has with Katara the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the line that I wrote down from Sokka that made me chuckle was mysterious little bald person.
Yeah. So those are fun. Those are fun moments.
Yeah, I'm glad that they kept that aspect or they were able to deliver that aspect of the character.
Yeah, he also went when Zuko shows up at the Southern Water Tribe to lay siege and to try and get Aang out. Zuko introduces himself as, of course, Prince Zuko, son of Lord Ozai, yada, 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 next in line for the throne. Whatever he says, it's an impressive, like, this is who I am. Yeah. And Sokka comes out and he's like, I'm son of Hakoda and Lord of Snow and Ice. He's like, he's trying to match that level of importance. And so I like Sokka. The little bit of playful banter we get back and forth between Sokka and Katara, it's not as much as in the original, but it's there and I like it.
Yeah.
And Katara, as mentioned previously, she has that Katara sappiness, that instinct to be the mother, that instinct to say everything's going to be all right. Hope we're going to be able to do it. That kind of stuff. I liked that. I liked that she was there for that. And I wrote down a couple of her quotes. I'll get them out in a second.
Yeah.
Katara, thoughts?
She did have her moments that were really good, but there were some kind of very flat speeches because, like, Katara's trying to, like, always be pulling at the heartstrings and emoting all the time, and there was just some times where she was a little off on the delivery.
Yeah, something you miss from animation is the ability to just draw the tear ducts activating.
Exactly. Like, so you can't expect all of that to be able to go over, but yeah, no, there was, for the most part, it was a good adaptation.
Yeah, a couple of lines from her that stood out to me. She says, we're never really ready until we have to be, which is a major theme of the original show, is that the all the main characters are kids. Like, they're not older than 16, 17 years old. And so all these characters are having to grow up way faster than they would have had they not been literally forced into a war.
Right.
So I like that line. I like that she highlights the difference between what Aang says, which is, I used to visit my friends in the Fire Nation all the time. And she says, we're only friends with our own kind. I think there's some modern day parallels to that. I think there's some political parallels to that. So I like that kind of thing. And one more that I have written down, she says, we have to protect those who can't protect themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I like that Katara is setting herself up early as a character who fights against injustice. Mm-hmm. I guess the other main character to talk about is Zuko. Did we have any early impressions of Zuko?
I enjoyed his character a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or the actor who played him. I feel like he's doing a really good job so far. He is definitely angry, which is like requirement number one for Zuko.
Right.
To be. And I think some of the coolest firebending we've seen so far has come from him in this episode. So I really enjoyed his interpretation of Zuko.
Yeah, and they gave him a little bit of a sense of power on his own. And what I mean by that, there's a specific moment in the animated show when Katara and Sokka and Aang are flying away on Appa after Aang has escaped from the Fire Nation ship. And Zuko is the one who sends out a blast of fire after Appa. And then Katara actually saves the day, which is another change I like, actually. In the show, the animated show, Zuko and Iroh do that move together. So I like that. It's like Zuko has some rage power behind him is the emphasis there, I think. And then there's this little thread that pulls a little bit through the episode where Katara's like, I'm the only waterbender and I've got to keep it secret. And so I'm not very good at it. And Aang gives her a little bit of advice about listening and feeling the energy around her and letting that focus you and that kind of thing. And so she doesn't become an instant expert, but she does get the opportunity to kind of save the day from that fire blast by using water from the mountain, snow, or from the ocean below or something. But she is the one who stops that specific attack from Zuko, rather than in the animated show, that's actually Aang. He uses his staff and like swings the fireball into the mountain, and that causes the avalanche that gets the ship stuck.
Right, right.
So I actually like that change, that Katara got the moment to be the hero and feel early confidence in the progress she's making in her waterbending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of mixed reviews on the scar. I think it's 1,000% better than...
I think it's just okay.
The movie.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
I zero complaints about it.
Were people wanting it to be more like a burn scar looking?
I mean, it's scarred over like a burn would be. So I thought it was good.
I did think it looked a little bit like a port wine birthmark for like that long.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, I think that's okay. Like if somebody who's completely new to the show showed up and thought, oh, that's just a birthmark. How juicy is it when they find out later that his father gave it to him?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think that's totally okay if it doesn't look like, quote, a burn mark, because then it lets new people have that surprise and the rage at feeling that Ozai did this to his own son.
Really random, but did Zuko in the original show, did he doodle a lot, like anger doodle?
Not so much.
I don't know what that was. Yeah.
Yeah. I was interested. I was like really trying to think about it. And I was like, I don't remember him like really keeping a journal or
him burn booking
his burn book, essentially. Right. Like, I don't remember that. And I was like, did I just not remember that correctly? But he didn't. Right.
No. So
that's interesting.
What's interesting is that it's like Zuko has become an expert on the avatars is what they've kind of set up. Is he's got this book and he was writing in it, so you could assume that maybe he wrote the rest of it too. It's not like something he acquired to give him information on the avatar. My takeaway was he's been traveling around for 3 years looking for the avatar and amassing knowledge about the various incarnations and preparing himself for who this new avatar could be. And Aang takes that notebook when he's escaping, so he's got now Aang's got information about the avatars at his disposal. And that kind of worries me a little bit, because is Aang not going to get that kind of information from communing with the spirits and talking with Roku? I'm sure he will. I don't want to have an over unfounded worry, but it seems like they're trying to ease some of the narrative backstory through, I have this journal with avatar information.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So
especially since it wasn't involved in the animated series.
No.
Yeah, it does give them a way to get disposition in there really quick.
Mm-hmm. Exposition.
Exposition. Yes. Sorry.
No, it's all right. I'm trying to look through my notes and see if there's anything else that really stands out.
We get Momo, right?
Momo in the animated show shows up at the Southern Air Temple.
Yeah.
So we'll start the next episode with them leaving the Southern Air Temple and Momo shows up. I'm pretty sure he's been in like promotional material. Yeah. So I'm not worried that he won't be there.
Because y'all know my love for Momo. I will riot.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Momo's in the series.
Yeah. I mean, we did end at the Southern Air Because it was Katara and Aang hugging each other after he calmed down from the Avatar state.
Mm-hmm.
And Appa looked a little better than I had seen.
Drew earlier this week had seen a still shot of Appa. He was like, why did you do my boy Appa like that? He looks so rough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it looked better.
It transferred a little easier.
Yeah. I was a little sad that they took away the fun of the bison whistle, though.
It didn't look as cute.
Well, and also, like, the fun of the bison whistle is Aang happens upon it at the marketplace, and he's like, oh, that looks fun.
And he already had it. It's like a dog
whistle.
Him. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And he blows it a couple of times, and you're like, Aang, I don't think that works.
Yeah.
But then it does, and it's like a surprise, and it's a fun thing, and now he just has a bison whistle. And it works. Like, Appa shows up 2 seconds after he blows it.
I did think I had like a fever dream about it looking like a little baby bison, and then you see it like fall against his shirt, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I didn't dream that up. That was real.
Yeah. A couple of just miscellaneous thoughts before we kind of wrap up, I think. We don't have like a ton left to talk about, do you?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Again, I don't want to sound overly critical of things because my impression was positive, but I do have a couple more small nitpicks of just things story-wise that I didn't love. I laughed at the animated title sequence narration dropping via Gran-Gran.
Yeah.
But I really didn't like Gran-Gran's character.
I did not either.
She was very flat. I didn't like the fact that she called out Aang as the Avatar rather than Zuko being the one to expose him as the Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Aang keeps that a secret, and Zuko shows up and is like, Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, wow, who? No way.
Yeah.
So I didn't like Gran-Gran being the one to expose him. And I also missed the fact that she wasn't the one to kind of like push along and encourage Katara and Sokka into like
going with
your destinies are intertwined now with his, and like encouraging them. And that almost being a fulfillment of something that has been going on since she was a kid, since before she was a kid. We just don't get that same emotional payoff with her.
That's true. And then like Sokka like immediately was just like, we got to go. That's not, I don't think, true to his character from the show. I don't think he was as accepting of that mission initially.
What do you mean?
Well, how you were saying, like, Gran-Gran kind of, like, pushed him to do it, and instead it was just, like, Sokka saying, like, we gotta go and go do it. Right? That's what I interpreted. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it happened more or less the same way in the animated show, where Zuko and Aang have a little bit of a confrontation. The Firebenders get ready to fight and cause some actual damage, and there's some, like, smoke and fallout. And Aang was like, I have to stop this before this little town is destroyed. And so he offers himself as a sacrifice so that they leave them alone. That more or less does happen. In addition there that I really liked was Aang turning to Sokka and saying, I think you might be the bravest person I've ever met. Because that gave Sokka a little bit more of a quick reason to change his mind about trusting Aang.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a smart little story change right there.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I guess the last point I have here in my notes is when we get to the Southern Air Temple, which I don't mind being just like a 5-minute sequence. I think that didn't need to, like, that's one episode that they can condense, and they did a good job of doing. I mean, it was fine. You get the point across. And I liked that what calmed Aang down from being in the Avatar state was remembering Gyatso as his friend and letting the sadness kind of take over the rage.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you didn't have the weird emotional burden of Katara at the end of the episode being like, we're your family now, when they've known each other for 20 minutes of screen time.
Right.
So I think, again, a smart change makes sense for the time constraints, episode's constraints that they have set for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So any final thoughts, everybody? I know it sounds like we've been negative, but hey, I like the show and I'm excited to keep watching.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited to see where this goes. The only other thing that I was just like, it almost feels like Aang wakes up and immediately knows all of his people are gone. While in the series, like, they still try to hide that from him. Like, remember, like, they're walking through the Southern Air Temple and, like, Katara, like, covers up a helmet.
Yeah, and Sokka says you can't keep protecting him, or you can't protect him forever.
Right, right. So, like, he has to know. But it's like they went there knowing what had happened. And I was just like, he went there to, like, try to find people. It was like, because this was still his village. Like, just because the people he knew won't be there anymore, there should still be a bunch of airbenders there.
Right.
And so he was trying to return home to some capacity. and then finds everyone gone.
Right. In the animated show, it was very much like nobody has seen an airbender in 100 years. So like, not necessarily they have been 100% dead and gone for 100 years. It was less of a certainty. And so Aang took them to the Southern Air Temple thinking, hey, there's people who can help us there because this is where I used to live.
Right. Or, like, right. Or they're just hiding. Like that's, yeah, you know, they, that makes sense. Or they've, you know, or avoiding conflict because they're air nomads. And so I don't necessarily like, because it was, I felt like we saw Aang like for 5 seconds and he was just like, yeah, everyone I know is gone. And you're like, what? Yeah. What is happening? How do you, you're like, well, yes, like you put it together that he's been gone for 100 years, but that whole, like, there was a whole realization that was missing. There was a whole, like, taking on this new burden.
Right. Well, it was the finding of Gyatso's body that was like the wake up call in the animated show, which was like, oh,
this is
Gyatso's dead.
Yeah.
Everybody's dead. I am by myself. And that was the trauma inducing the Avatar state.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just feel like that seemed like a small change, but I feel like it took away more than it needed to.
Yeah. I have one last thing, last thing to end on, which is a scene that is new for the live action show. Aang is in captivity on the ship and Iroh comes to visit him. And Aang gets the opportunity to ask him, why? Why did the Fire Nation do this? And Uncle's answer is hesitant because we know that he's more of a pacifist now. He references the fact that Ozai never thought that Zuko would find the Avatar, and so a return home would be unexpected, like maybe unwelcome is kind of the insinuation there. But what Uncle says to Aang is, some people say it's in our nature to spread and consume like fire. And others say that through the conquering, we are trying to achieve peace, which I thought was an interesting question or like an interesting concept. Did you guys have any thoughts on that bit of dialogue?
I found it interesting. I liked the scene itself. I liked the add-in of it. I knew he was trying to be as non-committal as possible, mm-hmm, to accepting the fact that they did start the war.
Right.
And that Iroh's committed various war crimes.
Himself. Yeah. That he doesn't want to talk about, right? So.
Yeah.
Dragon of the West.
Right. That was very interesting to see that there was that kind of interaction with Aang and Iroh.
And it's almost like a hesitancy, like Iroh has maybe asked the question of himself.
Right.
Because, I mean, we know where Uncle's come from. We know, mm-hmm, his history, and we know his hesitancy in furthering the crimes of the Fire Nation. And so to give such a tiptoe answer without necessarily betraying Zuko specifically, mm-hmm, in this moment, mm-hmm, I just thought it was a little interesting bit of dialogue.
Yeah. In the original show, do Aang and Uncle ever have like a moment by themselves where they talk?
I don't think that early on.
Right? It was like, I was trying to remember. I don't think we've seen that.
I think there might have been interaction between Zuko and Aang, and Iroh was present.
Right, but not just the two of them.
Yeah, I don't think Iroh was an active participant in the conversation, but this was just Aang and Iroh. Anyways, just wanted to point that out. Any other, I think we've all said our stuff, and it's all of us are tired.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, that is the end of the 24th episode of Crossroads of Destiny. Thank you all for, again, your patience and us taking the time to take care of ourselves while we waited to record again. Contact for the show, I'll go ahead and go through all of our contact information. Facebook.com/XRoadsPod, at XRoadsPod on Twitter. The most useful thing that you can do is go to Apple Podcasts and drop us a rating and a review and hit that subscribe button so other people can find us. Email feedback and ideas if you have any more direct feedback to us at xroadspod@gmail.com. We don't have a voicemail at the moment, but we'll seek out voicemail options if that is something that you reach out to us wanting. Melanie, do you have any social media you want to share?
I mean, you, like always, can try. It's mainly Instagram. It's Melanie Amanda 44.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best way to find Drew as well, because he doesn't really have a social media presence ever.
Yeah, and most of your social media presence is like sharing your kiddos.
My babies. Which is and great. If you find them, you're welcome, because they are adorable.
Yeah. Yeah, really, the bit, like, if you want to reach out to the show through not our official show-related social accounts, the best place is to reach out to me. I did have to retire the classic username on Twitter because obvious reasons. And so don't worry, the new one is just as silly. I'm on Twitter, ChelseaCC_17. So Chelsea, the name, letter C_17. That's in the show notes. You can find it there. You can find my other podcasts. The Cinescope podcast just had its first episode in 3 years in the last few weeks, which is really, really fun. You can find it where podcasts can be found or at Cinescope Pod on Twitter, thecinescopepodcast.com. And I won't talk about this one too much, but An American Workplace, which is the other TV show podcast that I recorded with my friend Katie over NBC's The Office. And that one's been finished for a few years, and it's been really fun. All show notes and all contact information can be found at xroadspod.com. And that is it. We will talk to you in episode 25, when we will talk about episode 2 of Netflix's live-action Avatar The Last Airbender series, which is titled Warriors. Thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you later. Bye.